program. Very little, honestly.
Test.
Maybe my
we're good.
Wow, used to be over there.
Huh. Tess, welcome everyone. I'd like to welcome you to a regular scheduled meeting of the City of Morro Bay Planning Commission. We're in the Community Center multi-purpose room tonight, and I would like to introduce the planning commissioners that are here this evening. Vice Chair Mike Rodriguez is not with us tonight, but Commissioner Joseph Ngrafia, Commissioner Asia King, and Commissioner Eric Meyer. My name is Bill Roshan. I'm your chair for tonight. And I'd like to really say thank you for you all being here. It's going to be an exciting and fun agenda, I think. And, well, it's always fun, but even tonight, it might be even more fun. So I've established a quorum, and I've called the meeting to order. And if I could, I'll ask you for a moment of silence to start the meeting. Thank you. And now if we could do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, we'll just have to sit down.
I'll hold it. Just need the paper. I should look at the same direction.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We just pledge ourselves over here.
Thank you to Hank and Ray. That wasn't for you. But with that, commissioners, any planning commissioner announcements? I do have one, and it's with kind of a tear in my eye that I want to say tonight is Cindy's last meeting with the planning commission. She's leaving Morro Bay, and she's been with us for 14 years, which is really a long time. And I have a kind of a quick little thing to read so everybody can kind of know the extent of her engagement with the city. And this came with the support from Scott Graham. So it's valid. Cindy's leadership, kindness, and overall expertise has been a significant asset to the city over the past 14 years. Where she served as planner for the city, Cindy currently serves as the planning manager for the city, where she leads the planning division supervising staff. Cindy has worked on some of the more complicated projects in the city, including the EIR for Vistra Battery Energy Storage System project, the redevelopment of a significant number of the waterfront leases along the Embarcadero, including recently the Libertine project. Cindy has also worked on significant long-range planning projects for the city, including the city's downtown and waterfront strategic plan, a visioning document that seeks to connect and enhance the downtown and waterfront areas, while also serving as a guide for private investment and economic development. Cindy, and importantly, also managed the city's general plan, local coastal land use plan, and zoning code. A big thank you. That's a heavy list, and the you know, the thank yous will keep coming in. Commissioners, can I invite you to say thank you to Cindy? Joe?
Sure. Ditto to everything that Bill said. And when I look at you in particular, I think about my early time on the Planning Commission and your kindness and patience with steep learning curve. So thank you very much for being here. You will be dearly missed. You really will.
Asia.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I have a lot of memories of meeting you on site when I first started, especially, and I really appreciate, I think I dragged a baby or two along with me, and I appreciated your patience and the deep historic knowledge that you have of the town. So thank you.
Eric.
Ditto again. Thanks. Thanks for listening when we were angry and reacting with kindness. I know myself, I sometimes get animated. But I think your resume is getting quite fat now with all those projects we've already completed. So thank you for those.
And so if we could, we do have a city council member here tonight, Jen. Oh, we have two. Lauren's here too. Would either of you like to say a thank you to Cindy?
Public service is something that grows on you over the years, and I think that it must have grown on you as well to have spent 14 years here and to hear the accolades of your group here. It's just nice, and I know that I have dealt with you sometimes too and found the same thing, kindness, patience, those kinds of things. So I'm very pleased to have had you in our orbit here, and wishing you the best of luck as you move on. And so anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lauren. Jen.
Just say a few words really quickly that basically echo what's been said in this room. I think everyone has said it so well, Cindy, that you are going to be greatly missed. Seriously, seriously greatly missed. And I just appreciate your dedication to our city over the years. And again, your kindness. I know that's said often because sometimes it's hard to have kindness and to come across as kind when there's really difficult subjects and tasks that come across and citizens that might be upset about something or commissioners or council members that might be upset about something. And you're just a very gracious person. And I just appreciate that and your professionalism. So I wish you the best in where you're going next. And I just know, I want you to know that you're always welcome here in Morro Bay and we're forever grateful.
Thank you, Jen. And just to show what a great job you've done, we're going to end with a member from the community who we didn't always get along with, but we were always happy to have him here. Terry, would you, and I'm going to limit you to like 1 minute.
Well, you better start the clock. And now for another perspective. I represent the private development community. And as such, I'm probably perceived as that cantankerous, angry citizen who can never be satisfied, which I'll probably have to accept a lot of responsibility for. But I will say that in the years that I've worked with Cindy, and it's been a number of years, she's never allowed me to push her to the limit or to fail to give me the information that I've asked for. She's been my go-to person for all things city planning. And I really thank you so much for that. And I guess I'm going to have to take on some projects in Pismo Beach from what I hear, which we'll see how that plays out. You're not out of my life. I hope you probably hope I'm out of yours, but we'll see how it goes. What's that?
Harry, thank you. Perfect. Thank you. So with that, you know, a sincere thank you. And I'm going to dry my eyes because we have a lot of work to do. And but we do wish you well. Thank you. Would you like to say anything, Cindy?
Yes. Thank you so much. Let me scooch this closer. It's really heartwarming to hear all of the positive things, and I really appreciate it more than you can all know. It's so heartwarming to be appreciated, and I've really, really enjoyed serving the community for the last 14 years. I really care a lot about Morro Bay. It's a really special place. And it's heartwarming as a planner to have the community engagement so that we can make sure that we are protecting the community and doing what's best for the community. And I pride myself as a professional planner to really make sure that I'm listening to what the community wants, because plans are only as good as the community input that you receive to develop those plans. And so it's been really professionally rewarding to be a planner here for the city. And I've learned so much over the 14 years, and I'm going to miss working here. So thank you.
Cindy, thank you so much. With that, we're going to move to the next item, which is public comment period. This is a chance for anybody to say anything that's not on the agenda. We do have a full agenda, and so you'll have two other opportunities to speak. But if anybody wants to raise an issue, this is your chance to do it. Betty, welcome.
Betty Winholtz. I have a question. In my neighborhood, we have an ADU going up, and there's no posting of any kind. And since ADUs are by right, maybe you don't have to post, but that's my question. If we have something going up in our neighborhood, can it still be posted, or is it not going to be posted and we just need to come to the office and ask about it? Thanks.
Betty, thank you. Cindy, do you want to field that one?
Yes. So for ADUs, we do still issue a coastal development permit, and our policies require that we do provide noticing 10 days prior to taking action.
Great. Thank you. Hank and Ray, anybody in the queue?
Chair Groshen, we have no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you very much. With that, we're going to go to our first item. And are we all good? This is a presentation from Cal Poly Landscape Architecture Program. And to introduce that, I'd like to invite up Jen Ford again. Thank you, Jen, for being here.
Thank you. I'm always happy to join a planning commission meeting because you guys are awesome. First of all, I would like to thank you, Chair Roshan, and esteemed planning commissioners for allowing me to speak this evening to introduce our presenters. About a month ago, alongside Chair Roshan, we were invited to attend what was called the Landscape Forum's 2024 Extreme LA Challenge at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. And, we had the privilege to explore fresh perspectives on the Morro Bay waterfront. And tonight we'll be presented again with their innovative ideas that we encountered during this presentation. And before we kick off this evening's presentation, allow me to provide some context about the more recent status of the areas they were asked to reimagine. The Coleman Park project has long been a focal point for the city, driven by a shared vision to rejuvenate this significant waterfront space and forge a vibrant community hub. Our amazing staff's collaborative efforts have been conceptual designs that began to take shape, that were guided with input from community stakeholders, aiming to create a welcoming and inclusive environment reflective of our collective aspirations. Due to funding limitations, surprise, our city has worked hard to apply for grants for the last few years. It continues to be a work in progress. Beyond Coleman Park lies the Morro Rock parking lot, an area of recent concern due to issues like circulation, uneven terrain, those sorts of things. These challenges underscore the broader need for holistic planning in our waterfront development efforts. So enter Extreme LA Challenge, a catalyst for innovation and fresh perspectives. I look forward to hearing from Lauren Hackney, she is a lecturer at Cal Poly, along with Kelsey Schaefer, who is the YTT Northern Chumash tribal representative. along with a Cal Poly student whose name is Casey Fetzer. And I just really look forward to hearing what they have to present to you today. Sorry, not everyone was able to be there at their original presentation, but I really think it's important for us to hear these great ideas that they have brought forward. So again, I want to thank you, Chair Roshan, the Planning Commissioners, Cal Poly Landscape Architecture Department, the students who worked really hard on this, you'll hear how hard they worked, for your commitment to fostering creative dialogue and exploration in our community's development journey. All right.
Jen, you work way too hard. You go to all these events, and let's go to we've got a Cal Poly doubleheader. So let's go ahead. Kelsey, are we going to start with you or Lauren? Where's Lauren? And we've got our visuals ready, right?
Visuals ready, just about. We have three of us presenting together, so we'll kind of share the
truth. Well, and just so everybody knows, you're in for a treat. I've heard this presentation already, and it's really good.
Thank you. It was such a joy to have both of you guys there. Hachu, my name is Kelsey, and I'm a member of Yaktichu Tichu, Yaktilhini, Northern Chumash Tribe of San Luis Obispo area and region.
Hi, my name is Casey Fetzer. I'm a Cal Poly fourth year student in the Landscape Architecture Department.
Hi, thanks so much, Jen, for that lovely introduction. I'm Lauren Hackney. I'm a lecturer in the Landscape Architecture Department, and we are excited to be here to share the work from Extreme LA, which is a design charrette that Cal Poly hosted about a month ago that focused on the land surrounding Morro Rock. Though it was an academic exercise, our hope is that these creative ideas will be a catalyst for the long-term process of envisioning the waterfront for the future. A little bit of information about the Extreme LA Challenge. It is an intense two-day creative experience for current and future landscape architects to build knowledge and come together to address real-world complex challenges. The event was co-sponsored by the Landscape Architecture Foundation, along with Landscape Forms, who's a manufacturer of outdoor furnishings and lighting. Both of those entities have a long history of supporting education and research in landscape architecture. There's actually a live stream link for a much longer recording if you're really interested in a deep dive that we can provide after the presentation. So today will be a short version of a much longer presentation. And I wanted to acknowledge the participants, which included 16 Cal Poly fourth year students. Many of them are here today. So thank you all for joining us. We were joined by 11 emerging professionals from around the country with really diverse practice backgrounds and perspectives, along with two distinguished team leaders, senior landscape architects. And we were also joined by Kelsey Schaefer, whose deep connection to the place and her deep understanding of the site really inspired all of us, as Chairperson Roshan and Councilmember Jen Ford. And so we really appreciated your support. But I also wanted to clarify that the city of Morro Bay didn't solicit this work at all. We're just kind of providing this to further the conversation. Here are some takeaways that the students came up with from the event. Not only was it a chance for innovation and ideas, it was a really unique collaboration between professionals and students, really unusual. And from a kind of outside perspective, all of the participants approached the event with really open minds and creative thinking. And an event like this is really an opportunity to shift from a mindset of we can't do that to could we do that? And I think you'll see that reflected in this work. So the Extreme LA Challenge focuses on both a site and a prompt. So the site of this year's challenge was not Morro Rock or the power plant. We actually focused on the land that connects them, which is a causeway that was constructed in 1933 from rock quarried from Morro Rock and filled with dredge from the harbor. This infrastructure created Morro Bay as we know it today by dramatically transforming the estuary, cutting off its northern outlet to the sea to create the harbor and connecting Morro Rock to the land. So the work you'll see today responds to a challenge that is not just about the past or about a future defined by climate change, though both of those are addressed. It's really grounded in our present moment and place. Both Morro Bay and Cal Poly are in the traditional homelands of Yaktichu Tichu Yaktilhini Northern Chumash Tribe, who have a documented presence in this area for over 10,000 years. The Tilhini peoples have stewarded their ancestral and unceded homelands, which include all of the cities, communities, federal and state open spaces within the Slo County region. The challenge site included the parking areas next to Morro Rock, as well as Coleman Drive and Coleman Park, and the Embarcadero up to the Triangle Lot, which many people understand as the Maritime Museum. It's kind of southeast of the power plant. This complex area, as Councilmember Ford mentioned, has several current and planned projects in progress. And our hope is that these ideas will be a helpful addition to the work that the city is already doing in this area, including the Coleman Park refresh, the adjacent plans in discussion at the power plant site, and future adaptation plans for the Morrowbach parking lot and the Embarcadero, where predicted coastal hazards, including flooding, erosion, and dune migration, will substantially impact public access and imperil its habitats. And in fact, those flooding impacts are already here. Already the parking lot has been flooded and access has been closed in the last couple of years. And those coastal flooding events are predicted to increase substantially over the next 75 years. And related to this, actually, the Morrowbach Beach has been identified recently as a location that will experience severe erosion as well. So the future is now, and it's changing quickly. The prompt that was given to the participants that they tackled for around a day and a half, a very complex question for a very short time, was to design landscapes that are resilient for the future while taking reparative actions for past and current generations. So today you'll see three approaches that enhance stewardship through reprogramming that elevates Indigenous knowledges, traditions, and perspectives, that prioritize significant habitat restoration supported by stewardship, education, and low-impact recreation on water and land, that consider shoreline change, the predicted flooding and erosion of the beach, and future impacts to the estuary and ocean brought on by climate change, and that weigh impacts of and benefits of continued public access to sensitive environments.
So as a tribal member, we were reached out to participate in this challenge in whatever kind of capacity we thought was appropriate. We first met with all of the students and the emerging professionals over on site at the Rock. We met at Coleman's Beach and we walked over to the Rock. And just kind of shared with the group our tribe's cultural history here, our traditions here, and really what Morro Bay means to us and what is our responsibility here going into this challenge. That was kind of a question is, you know, what can they take from us in this? And we shared our stories with them about how our village here in Morro Bay is named Sitkawa. It's a place of the dogs. It's named that way because there was a large dance house here to house all of the other tribes that came from other areas to visit the Rock, Sisimu. And as the homeland tribe, we house them. We had a really big dance house for them. And with every dance house, you set out food for the people, for the animals, and the dogs in the area and the animals knew this. This was a place that was abundance of food for them, easy food. And so they were everywhere around here. And we called the place of the dogs and honoring the dogs. And so we shared that story with the students and the teams, and we walked through. And throughout the next day, working with them, they had created a word list that they requested. And that's what we see on the screen here. Words that they had asked for to be translated in Tilhini, our Tilhini language, to Unasmun Tilhin Katichu. And this kind of, as Maura had kind of talked about, this represents in some ways the complexity of the gaps of knowledge here, complexities in the collaboration and the site in general that we wanted to share with you guys. After the site visit, everyone got together to bring questions, very direct and intentional questions about the site. And together, before they split into their groups, they went over all of the questions and organized them into common themes and common groups that they were noticing and paired them with pictures as well. The idea of doing this is to open up the conversation, to bring about ideas and not necessarily be closed off from the beginning, but being able to have those conversations to spark ideas to accommodate the stakeholders that are here within the time constraints of this project. All of the five categories that they kind of narrowed them down to were for ecology, nature winds, land justice, public access, local power, and change over time. And they split into these five groups, and then later they reduced them down to three groups, finding commonalities between a couple of them that they could group together. The three groups we named in our Tilhini language, Ki'i Tutinha, it means we return to and we come back. This is for our ecology nature winds and our land justice group that joined together. Our third one is Ki'ishna Kiniwana. And this is we intend to know. This is our local power and change over time group. And we have Flikinati, and this is our public access group. And it was important to know that in this time frame with this challenge, the focus was really on asking questions and evaluating ideas, not rushing to solutions, which so much of our human nature, that's kind of what we look for, especially in a planning department for the future. So it's more creating space for conversation here. So our first group that we have to present, our first team is Ki'i Tutinha. And this is We Return, We Come Back. This group was led by Maura Rockcastle with 10x10 landscape architecture. And this is our ecology land justice team. So they had the question with Morro Bay being such an ecologically sensitive area. They asked, how might this landscape evolve if animals, birds, fish, climate resilience, and thriving ecological systems are our priority here? Focusing and understanding that we have endangered species with the otter, we have threatened species with the goby, we have the snowy plover here. We also have invasive species that are threatening our dune communities, as well as our three primary dune communities here. So why did we join these groups together? As the teams kind of worked through, they noticed a lot of similarities and goals and priorities between Ecology Wins and Land Justice. And the team pulled this quote from the Re-Decolonizing. Indigenous peoples account for 5% of the global population, but protect 80% of all biodiversity. The survival of planetary life is contingent upon their continued caretaking of their lands. As such, Indigenous land rematriation, the act of returning stolen Indigenous lands, culture, knowledge, and resources, is critical to the articulation of any climate action plan. This really stuck out to the team, and they used this to inspire the foundation of their project, emphasizing cultural and ecological justice centered with Indigenous leadership to further the climate resiliency. And the team asked the question, how might land back and co-management plans help to reestablish Indigenous care and land practices to this landscape? And so we define land back, we look at co-management, and specifically an example of a proposal of a collaboration between the YTT Tribe Land Conservancy, Cal Poly for Diablo Lands. The main goals with this are for land conservancy, land back, economic development, regional and state collaboration. And this proposal helps to create a conservation framework for Diablo Canyon lands, prioritizing natural resources, tribal resources, and public access. The team created their own somewhat of a vision statement. We envision a future where stewardship and management is returned to the hands of Yaktichu Tichu Yaktilhini, Northern Chumash tribe, through collaborative action with local and government organizations. Intentional access will protect cultural significance of the landscape while educating the general public. And they have picked out three main words that stuck out to them: return, connect, and protect. The idea of water, land, animals, plants, and people, creating a storytelling that can be woven throughout the pedestrian experience throughout the Embarcadero into the waterways. All of these questions led to their main goals that they outlined here. Pardon my paperwork. Their goals that they outlined: acknowledging and honoring tribal territories, wisdom, and assets, enhancing connections between the sea and the land, engaging with the site using a light on the land approach is very important, and implementing a tiered strategy for human interactions. We discussed access, who are the stakeholders, the YTT tribe along with other tribal communities, businesses in the Embarcadero, the community, tribal community, the plant and animal community, as well as California state parks and tourists. They also went through outlining phasing, how to responsibly plan for now and for later. There are certain things that can be done now that are on the smaller scale, as well as things to plan that are a much larger scale for the future. So making sure to plan that responsibly. This slide here outlines the general area that the teams were working on. This is what Lauren outlined. Starting on the right side of the screen, we have the Triangle parking lot, through the Embarcadero, Coleman Beach and Park, the causeway leading out to the parking structure at the Rock. This team's first idea was for restoration of the dune area and the shoreline. That is highlighted here in yellow and green. And then also their second idea was making sure that they have a minimal impact. So using existing infrastructure, using the existing roads and pathways to make that light on the land approach to it. Their third idea is improving the pedestrian experience through storytelling and continually having engaging little nooks along their route and along the pathway from the land to the ocean. This is a zoomed in slide so we can walk through, starting with the parking lot next to the Maritime Museum. This group decided to remove the parking from the rock location and relocate parking here to the triangle lot and in front of the power plant area, utilizing that space while also enhancing the roadway, the pedestrian access to the Embarcadero, creating a landscape promenade and just making much safer passage. And then they also included after that a cultural center there. This would be a place for learning, for history, and really engagement with the community before starting the walk through the causeway and getting to Coleman Beach. Right there along Coleman Beach in the elbow there, you can see we have the dune restoration. We have the shoreline restoration with native plants and also allowing controlled and safe access to Coleman Beach. They had knocked out for stepped access, water access there, and as a way to engage the community. Moving along the causeway, we see here the white lines, that is the existing road, and it leads out, instead of a parking structure, this is a turnaround area. This is meant to be for access for a drop-off section for emergency services, for ADA access, but really you can see taking away the majority of the parking and moving it to utilize the parking area along the triangle and the Embarcadero instead. We also have the blue line is for the pedestrian access, and the brown line as well as for pedestrian and bike access. We can see the biggest change here is a large channel around the rock. So one of the things that they had focused on was, a lot of the rising sea level, that pressure is coming from the north, from the ocean. And if we look at the history that Lauren so nicely outlined, the rock was an island at one point. And so the idea of a land back component, giving the land back to the water, to the ocean, where it wants to travel through this way, but understanding the need for the causeway, needing to have that for the harbor safety and the practices, but still giving that space for land back. Not completely dropping off access. There is a boardwalk that would connect where the current parking is and connect it to Whittle Walls to that beachside access. This would allow access seasonally, as well as just getting around to that back rock side for emergency access. It's something that was really important to create this channel, and really give that land back to the ocean was such an important part of this project with these students and with the emerging professionals as well. And so that is the outline of this presentation, Ki'i Tutinha, for the Land Back and Ecology Wind Group.
Thank you, Kelsey. The second team is Ke'ishna Kiniwana, or We Intend to Know. This was led by Sarah Keel. This group began with three questions. First, how does the experience of the site reflect the power of Moro Rock? Second, how can the experience of the site balance intimacy and revelation? And third, how does that experience change over time? Long before any of us and long after us, there will be Moro Rock. Everything around it is impermanent. How the power of this place resonates is central to this approach, starting with the pre-settlement shoreline when Moro Rock was part of the ocean. With Army Corps interventions to create the harbor, Moro Rock became part of the land, with rock excavated from its face to support a causeway connecting it to the shoreline. Now this land connection is predicted to be vulnerable to multiple shoreline threats, including erosion from wave action, pressure on the revetment, and limited space for dune migration. How could a different approach to this land anticipate and embrace continued change? This team's approach acknowledges Mora Rock Othisamu as the center of power and knowledge, that layers of knowledge and power in knowledge together create layers of power that ripple out from Mora Rock and organize different experiences for different stakeholders. The overall strategy balances revelation and intimacy, revelatory experiences of gathering together as a community, the intimacy of arrival at Mora Rock that acknowledges its power as well as intimacy with nature, and slow immersive connections in between. The approach locates recreation and play at the Triangle Lot and Maritime Museum closer to downtown as part of an overall strategy for a safer and more connected Embarcadero. At Coleman Park, it proposes new community gathering spaces and improved beach access. And at Mora Rock, it creates a sense of arrival and intimacy through spaces that amplify seasonal change, such as dune restoration and new planting, by reimagining Mora Rock not as a parking lot, but as a place of power and respect through separating and surrounding a reduced parking area with new planting and grading that anticipates shoreline change, and by restoring a relationship between the ocean and Mora Rock with tidal pools at the warm water outlet tunnels, as well as access to the estuary. This group also asked, what if we carry this even further? What if, anticipating continued shoreline change, we allow the power of Mora Rock to inform the space around it by breaching the causeway and restoring the historic relationship of Lisamu with the ocean?
And I was a part of the One Who Dances group. We were focused on public access in our project. So our driving questions were, what if movement shapes space rather than vice versa? What if the landscape changes both over time and space? And then what if shared space becomes common ground? And this diagram that we made shows kind of how the Embarcadero is very disconnected both physically and culturally from the rock at its current state, and how can we work to smooth that transition from the Embarcadero all the way to the rock. So our driving concept was transitional and transformative. Again, the triangle lot where the Maritime Museum is very disconnected from the rock, again, physically and culturally. And so how can we make that transition for somebody in a car, on bike, by foot, from the triangle lot through Coleman Park, Coleman Beach, all the way to the rock? And so this shows the transition. We were thinking about transition in terms of land to water, community to personal, and then everyday place to sacred place, and thinking about what it was in the past, what it is today, and what it might look like in the future. So this was our overall plan. We called it the journey. It starts over on the right-hand side of the triangle lot, implementing a cultural center in a willow grove. It moves through pedestrian-centered design in the Embarcadero to Coleman Beach, where we establish a dance house pavilion, and then over to the left-hand side where we left the parking lot but condensed it and then included a tidal theater. Starting over here at the triangle lot, our cultural center was encompassed by this willow grove, and we really wanted to start our design with a not like acknowledging the tribe who has always been here, and then proceeding on to the Embarcadero, where we ensured a pedestrian-centered design. And in this part of the design, we really wanted to bring nature up into this more heavily industrial part of Morro Bay. And then in the middle here, bringing in that dance house pavilion to try to connect the heavily pedestrian-centered now Embarcadero onto Coleman Beach, and then to the end where we know how important it is to have a parking lot in this spot for the public, for us as college students, as surfers, for the little guards. So keeping that parking lot, it is underutilized right now in the fact that it is way too big. And so condensing that and keeping it to one side, and then allowing this tidal theater to happen, which there'll be more images of later, but to account for sea level rise and then bringing in more ecological elements on this side. So our group really focused on establishing that cultural entrance, bringing scale down from big power plant down to human scale, and then moving into the pedestrian-centered promenade of the Embarcadero to the tidal shelves seen on the right-hand side over by the rock.
So while the approaches were all quite unique from each other, I think we also saw a number of shared opportunities that we wanted to summarize for you. First, every group saw opportunities for storytelling. How can storytelling and traditional Indigenous knowledges weave through this landscape to inspire, educate, protect, and build deeper relationships? Opportunities for intentional connections that Casey just described that create a more interesting, exciting, and intentional journey from the Embarcadero to Mora Rock with new destinations in between. Through those connections, opportunities for spatial awareness of the history and power and importance of this land over time. Opportunities to restore habitats, to return land to Morro Bay's many unique and threatened or endangered plant and animal species through habitat restoration and an approach to building lightly on the land. Opportunities to engage the ocean through physical or implied connections between Mora Rock and the ocean that protect its habitats and restore historic relationships, and also by a deeper understanding of the challenges and opportunities posed by increasing wave action and sea level rise. Opportunities to engage the estuary for water and fishing, but also to learn about and protect the important species that it supports. And by engaging the estuary through storytelling, for example, memorializing the former mass of Mora Rock before it was excavated, as the sketch on the left suggests, or through features that express and celebrate the changing tides. There are opportunities to engage with those tides, not just on a daily basis at low tide and high tide, but through the wet and dry seasons and as they change through sea level rise, which presents a chance to see the water not just as a hazard, but as a collaborator. And that collaboration could be expressed through design elements that make the tidal change much more present and immersive in the everyday experience of this place.
It continues to create opportunities to bridge the gap between nature and culture, marrying them together as they're a lot of times, you know, on the same path together. Also bringing opportunities to acknowledge and to learn, creating spaces for education, for interaction, for history, whether that's in the form of a cultural center or a dance house pavilion, or some other way, really incorporating ideas of culture and interaction. This is a rendering that's based off of other cultural centers in other areas. Good examples are Santa Ynez has a new cultural center. Yochidehi has a really wonderful cultural center as well. Also creating opportunities to acknowledge and to learn. This is a beautiful rendering that Casey had presented in their team's work of just really putting it on the human scale. You know, as Casey said, this is having a huge industrial power plant right next to it. It is very dominating of the space, but creating on the human level a cultural space that marries ecology with us and creating something really lovely that people would like to spend their time there. This is an opportunity for Safer Embarcadero. Each team has addressed the issue of access, safe access. The roads that are existing here, as you can see on the top, kind of shows how chopped up it is and kind of how there isn't a lot of pedestrian access. There isn't a lot of crosswalks there. So making a better experience for pedestrians. The bottom is the proposal for a pedestrian promenade to separate out those safe spaces. This is another rendering of different ideas of continuing to improve the Embarcadero for access. And engaging the pedestrians with the retail and just making Morro Bay beautiful the way that it is. Opportunities to sit and stay. This really highlights engaging the pedestrians with the retail and not having the street or parking or access kind of separate. You can see here in the first rendering on the left-hand side, you kind of see where it's a more intimate, where there's the shops, and then you have the walkway for the pedestrians, the promenade. To the left, you have the parking. It really kind of creates a visual divide there and a safety net there.
I'm in the same thing as showed right next to it in a different way, just showing that relationship and spatial awareness and spatial planning can be improved along the businesses of the Embarcadero. So these are our three teams outlined, Ki'i Tutinha, Ki'i Shnakinawana, and Fikinati. Each digested and processed all of the information, all of the content and the components in different ways, some common, some unique. But really, this is just an opportunity to bring about the conversation and stimulate ideas and really not plan for just one moment, but think about community as a whole of all of the stakeholders, everyone that enjoys this space on a daily basis, whether they work on the harbor, whether they are dog walkers, they're the high schoolers having lunch there, you know, you're surfing. Every day people are coming here and enjoying the space. So being able to kind of be very inclusive of not just one moment or two moments, but really every single day, the whole area is sacred for everyone that comes here.
We really appreciate, again, the opportunity to present to you all today. And we wanted to kind of button it up with some applications for this work for the group to consider. I think first, the planning context, to think about enhancing the shoreline's ecological and recreational value within complex jurisdictions like the Coastal Commission. The need to think about sea level rise to reduce the risks to those environmentally sensitive habitat areas, as well as regional utilities and mitigating flood events and preventing the disruption of key community access. As Kelsey just mentioned, there's a huge opportunity for community-centered visioning in this place that imagines a more inclusive future for the waterfront to foster stewardship of the unique cultural and ecological resources of the shoreline, to engage as a community and with Indigenous communities, to promote equity, environmental justice, and public health, and to preserve the local economy and increase its resilience to climate change. And all of that combined with an amazing opportunity to adapt together, right, to build community capacity for climate change adaptation, to provide a forum for education and understanding, and to find unique opportunities for funding and adaptive reuse wherever possible. We're all available for Q&A, but we wanted to leave it here that we see this wonderful opportunity for a community-centered future in this incredible place.
Lauren, Casey, Kelsey, thank you. If you guys could hang out there, commissioners, I'd like to invite the public up first for comment, and then we can have our chance to explain after that. Would that be okay? So anyone from the public who'd like to say a few words on this, we'd love to hear from you.
Hi, I'm Bill Martini.
Hey, Bill, welcome.
Thank you. What it was, for years I've been talking about the parking lot out there. Some of these ideas are terrific. Maybe they push some things a little further or, and some things not enough. But overall, it's a great idea. The main thing is, how do you go from concept to reality? And the point I was going to bring up is I have a set of plans here that show the Morro Bay parking lot with green, probably about a third to half the parking spaces that it has now, because now it kind of looks like a wall or a poor version of a Walmart parking lot. I mean, it's terrible with all the riprap. And I mean, it's your number one attraction in Morro Bay, and it's probably the worst, in my eyes, visually eyesore there is out there. So this set of plans that was done a while back shows similarities to what was proposed tonight, maybe not as drastic. It was done by Ned Rogelway, County Planning, 1962. So what I'm saying is here we are 60 years later. We're still scratching our heads on how do we do something out there. And my main thing is how do we go from A to B and get it done, because that parking lot, is that area is special. I agree with as far as the Chuba. But you also, this... In all fairness to the Salinians, this is a mutual area for both tribes, and I think they partially recognized it, but the old maps of 1770s shows the equivalent of Highway 41 being the dividing line between the two nations, so I think this is right on the border, and not that the ideas aren't great, but I think you need to bring in both tribes to kind of mutually, you know, benefit, but primarily... Let's get from A, B, you know, A to B. Thank you.
Bill, thank you. Casey, Bill is much older than he looks. So he's been around. He's been around here for a while. Really, that's super helpful. Others? Terry, nothing to say.
Well, they seem so aggressive.
Terry Simons, Morro Bay. I, too, went to Cal Poly, and in 1967 did a planning study for the city of Paso Robles and have watched that for the last 60 years and seen how much an early study like that can evolve and become. Be careful what you dream for. I think there's some wonderful ideas here. I would love to have been at the presentation when this group presented to the Tidelands Trust Leaseholders Association or the Chamber of Commerce. I think the response might have been different than in front of a planning-oriented, socially forward-looking group. But on the whole, I think it's a wonderful project. And I think it's good to see people that are coming after us thinking about the future, because that's really what we all have to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Others? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Lauren. Can you make it to the mic there? That would be great. Then we could get you on the Zoom call.
I'm curious, because this is the first time I've seen this presentation,
yes.
And it's such a different presentation and a different mindset than other,
yes.
other things that we hear often. I'm just wondering if there is a way to get a copy of what was on the screen so that we could
Great.
Look at it.
Great question. Lauren? Yes.
Okay. Great.
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Anybody else? Jane, welcome.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jane Roshan, and yes, I am related to the commissioner. I just wanted to first just applaud the team for the wonderful information. It's really exciting to learn about all the opportunities for Morro Bay and also the substantial effort that you all made to root Morro Bay in both place and time. I guess I would just like to empower the team and the community at large to think about this information as a tool to access all the resources that are available to encourage this type of development in communities. There's a whole network growing of resources. I'm thinking about grants and loans and technical assistance that are really encouraging this type of place-based thinking that's rooted in community and culture and context. And there's just so many opportunities really to think about, you know, small business revitalization and economic growth in partnership with community development. And that network, when they're looking at, you know, applications and proposals for this type of work to get resources to make it happen, they're looking for this exact type of information to understand that, you know, communities are thinking about the cultural context and the place-based framing and future development needs. So I definitely think this is a really empowering tool to think about accessing resources to get this type of work done.
Thank you for that optimism. Anybody else want to say anything? Hank, do we have anybody in the queue?
Chair Roshan, we have no hands raised in the queue.
Thank you. If I could, I'd like to go to the commissioners and see what they have to say. But Cindy and Michael, can I start with you? Can you respond, especially after that excitement of a follow-through with grants and other resources that might be out there? How do you see this opportunity going to another next step?
Well, I think as the public speakers indicated, you know, that this is foundational work, and it's important anytime you're going to do land use planning around an area that is, you know, well used and loved, it's really good to understand the history of that place. And it's really good to have unconstrained thinking about what's possible. And I think that the students here, the team here has really been able to utilize this process to do that for us, right? They have created a body of work here that can be drawn on in the future at such time as the city looks to this area to do any type of land use planning and thinking about how we might modify or change the space. We want to do that in context, and this really moves the needle in terms of giving us that foundation.
Michael, thank you. Cindy, I know you've been so involved with the waterfront for so long, and this is, I think, in many ways a follow-through on some of your ideas.
Right, right. So I would just echo what Michael had said. It's an excellent body of work that the city can use. The city does have a desire to update the waterfront master plan. The area Tamora Rock and is included in this boundary area from all the way south Tidelands Park, and there is a desire to extend that master plan boundary area even further north across Morrow Creek and up to Atascadero Road. So it's an excellent resource for the city to have as it embarks on the update of the waterfront master plan.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much. Commissioners, Eric, may I start with you?
I really love having my mind expanded on things, and thank you for that. It's lots of ideas that I haven't thought of that, and I wish I had thought of. I'm kind of jealous of not being part of it. I had something else going on. But the experiential aspects of it are really fun and fascinating to me, the idea of the walk out and the experiencing of the terrain and the sort of experiencing the grandeur, let's say, of the rock. The one thing I wish we had been able to do is take that area and push it back all the way through the entirety of what's known as the Willows, which goes up the various creeks. There's Little Morrow Creek and Morrow Creek, and there's an unnamed creek that goes up the side of the highway that we used to skateboard in. But all of that land together in some way seems to be in need of repair, let's say. Maybe repair is the wrong word, but it kind of is, because it was all dredged and filled by the Navy in advance of the site that they built there. I like the tidal terraces going down, so you can experience especially something like king tides, with the king tides being marked in some sort of heroic way, you know, so that every year you could see what actually was happening there. It'd be fun. And it's interesting, it's crazy thought to open back the channel again, and there's a lot of technical aspects to that which I'm sure we would all get told about at some great length. Thank you all. I look forward to trying to utilize this, and I hope that we can find a way to keep the data so we have everybody's sort of analysis to review in the future. And however that gets worked out, I don't know. I'm going to leave that to staff and you all.
Eric, thank you. Asia.
Yeah, thank you guys for your hard work. I'm jealous too. I wish I'd been there as well. Sounds like it was a lot of fun. I was thinking about specifically while you guys were presenting about how you brought in the past and the future to inform your designs. And I know Joe has brought this up when thinking about as we plan for Morrow Bay's waterfronts, what the future is going to bring us with climate change. I went to planning school on the East Coast, where sea level rise is already there and already a huge problem and already greatly impacting their built environment. And I know it's been slightly slower here on the West Coast, but it is here, like you were saying. And beach towns in Northern California are starting to have to practice retreat and different strategies for managing sea level rise and erosion of their beaches. And so I really appreciate that focus for the town and how, you know, with last year's storms and this year's storms, flooding, and just the impacts of weather change are going to become an annual issue instead of a distant future issue. And so I think the more we can consider that and talk about that and mull it over and get the science-based facts of how that's going to impact us, how we're going to see it in our daily lives. I think it's just a really important part of the conversation. So thanks for bringing it into our lived experience.
And if I could suggest Asia, her new baby is seventh generation Central Coast. Yeah. So the long perspective here really does make sense. Thank you. Joe.
Oh, well, I, of course, want to thank the students for, in my case, just initiating some new thinking about what the story of the rock is. And for an old guy like me, I appreciate any any encouragement to think some new thoughts. I mean, it's so easy to see the rock and you see it's immutable and massive and pervious. You'll lose sight of the fact that there's been a lot of things that have changed about how we view the rock. And I was just thinking simply, you know, London has Big Ben and San Francisco has its bridge and then Paris has its Eiffel Tower. And, you know, Morro Bay has this rock and, you know, we have to do better by it. We really do. Thank you.
Joe, thank you. I guess I get to go last here on this one. So a big, big thank you. And what you hear is an excitement about thinking in different ways. And to Bill's point, I think the time might be more right now than it was 60 years ago. So I do think that there's a responsibility here, a stewardship that you are all articulating. And I think it's something that in the presentation, you find a way to merge that with our current situation. During the presentation, when Jen and I were there, there was the comment that the parking lot was like a town square for Morro Bay. I really do buy that. It might not be the most handsome town square I've ever seen, but it is. And somehow merging that with good stewardship, the ability to show reverence and respect both to nature and ourselves, I think that might be the opportunity that you poetically speak to. So even though this might not be a plan we just apply, I certainly think it's a marvelous starting point. So thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. If we could, is everybody good? I'd like to keep going so we can get to our second part, Cal Poly. We have one quick item we need to take care of, our consent calendar. Commissioners, do we have any comments or do I have a motion of approval relative to the consent calendar? Eric?
I move to approve.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Joe, thank you. Cindy, would you poll the commission?
Commissioner Meyer.
Yes.
Commissioner Ingrappia.
Yes.
Commissioner King.
Yes.
Chairperson Roshan.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. Cal Poly Part 2. This is Michael Codron's second meeting with us. So we're so lucky to have him and a lot of work in a short time. But Michael, would you like to introduce Dr. Michael Boswell in the next program?
Yes, thank you, Chair Roshan and members of the commission. I'm Michael Codron, Interim Community Development Director. This is my ninth day in the role, and it's every day is a fantastic learning experience. But I do have a lot of experience with Cal Poly and the City and Regional Planning Department. I just want to highlight what a great partnership it is between not only CRP and Morro Bay, but really jurisdictions across the county benefit from engagement by the students and their work in paid internships and in other ways as well. So the draft climate action plan that's presented tonight as part of the agenda, it's really excellent work. It's benefits from an understanding of the state of the art of climate action planning that Dr. Boswell is able to really is demonstrated in his career and is able to profess to the students. And I would say that, you know, there is climate action planning happening across the state of California. It's a requirement. And so there are best practices. And I believe that this is a document that includes a lot of those best practices.
And this is a required plan.
Yes. And this is also state-of-the-art because it includes discussions about resilience and adaptability. And so, you know, initially in 2006 era when climate action planning started, it's really about trying to address climate change in terms of averting some of the worst outcomes and working on greenhouse gas emissions and trying to reduce those to the greatest extent possible. And while that is still a focus, there is also a huge component of this that is understanding that some of those impacts are going to occur and that communities have to be resilient and adaptable. And so there are those measures in this proposal as well. And so the project team tonight is going to present components of the climate action plan, and they're interested in community feedback and in your feedback. And as we're nearing the end of the term, they will have still a couple of additional weeks to take that feedback and put it into a final work product, which is a contracted work product that, you know, we've engaged with them to produce. And then the next steps for the city, I just want to highlight, would be, you know, more community engagement, you know, would be internal discussions, especially there's a component of this that is about municipal operations, because the city is a, you know, an emitter of greenhouse gas, and we can lead by example and make changes in terms of municipal operations in order to accomplish some of these goals. And then a lot of these measures will need to be right-sized for our community. So we want to be successful in implementation. And so, you know, taking on all of the best practices across the state may not be a recipe for success for the city, but that's what the process of developing and bringing forward a climate action plan for Planning Commission recommendation and City Council adoption, that's what that will hold, is making sure that ultimately the document that is presented to the City Council is a good fit and that the city can be successful with implementation. And so with that, I'm happy to introduce Professor Boswell to kick things off.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, commissioners. Thank you for having us this evening. Wonderful to see Cindy. Congratulations. Been wonderful to work with Cindy. Get to say my little piece on Cindy as well.
Absolutely.
Been wonderful to work with her for these two quarters. She's been super supportive of what we're doing. So we'll miss her, but I already joke that maybe at next year we'll do Pismo Beach's climate action plan and I can just show back up. And always good to see Michael. Michael's also an alumni of our city and regional planning program, so always proud to see our alumni out there doing great work. I'm going to basically turn it over to my students, and this is their project. I'm going to let them present it to you, and I will make a few wrap-up remarks at the end and talk about sort of where we're going next with the project. So,
great. Thank you. So the public knows this is not a thin document. I think it's 200 pages, which Terry read every page, and every commissioner, we also read it too. So thank you.
I'll make sure this works first. That's okay. I can start without it. I just wanted to say, first off, my name is Colton Kladifka. I'm one of the second year graduate students in the City and Regional Planning Department. And I first wanted to say I was really blown away by the Landscape Architecture's project. It's really nice to see someone address climate change in a way that really focuses on cultural heritage and sort of the human scale of things. I think it'll go very nicely with our climate action plan as well. So just as a brief introduction, this is a team of about 14 graduate students under the advisement of Dr. Michael Boswell, as well as in collaboration with the Morro Bay Community Development Department. We'll just make this work with the laptop. So just to start off, we just wanted to say briefly what a climate action plan is. It's a community-specific framework. These documents are unique to each city that we work with, and they're a way to track and reduce greenhouse gases, as well as to create adaptive policies to address both current and future climate hazards. And why we needed to update Morro Bay's 2014 cap is generally because it's relevantly outdated. Local goals and state goals change over time. Targets for greenhouse gas emissions change over time. And then the needs of each community change as more people come in and leave. And it's always a good idea to keep these things updated to make sure that the city is adequately prepared to address any future threat and any sort of current climate hazard that they may have. The scope of work for this project was to start off with a background report and policy audit of Morro Bay's existing studies, and then to go out to the community and engage with them, hold different events, try to get some ideas of what they're interested in. And then the final project, the final part of the project is to create the comprehensive strategies to look at all the different areas of climate change that we've identified and then produce a final climate action plan document. The timeline of this, it was a 20-week project over two 10-week academic quarters. So we started all the way back in August of 2023. The first 10 weeks were spent developing that background report and then actually going out into the community. And then the second half of it, which is what we're in now, is creating those comprehensive strategies, all culminating in week 20, where we're going to give to you guys a final draft cap. And then right now we're in week 19, where we're speaking to you all. So looking at that background report, the first things that we wanted to look at is all the previous documents that Morro Bay had already produced. So these are things like the 2014 Climate Action Plan and the city's general plan, Plan Morro Bay. We also looked at the greenhouse gas emissions inventory to see where sort of the existing conditions are right now, and then look at different vulnerability assessments, one by Michael Baker International in 2017, as well as one that the planning department took under internally. We then looked at state and regional policy just to make sure that everything we're doing is within the legal framework, and then also looking at some other climate action plans that are similar to Morro Bay on coastal cities to try to get some ideas of best practices and some innovative ideas we can bring to your city. The two documents that were the most important to this project were definitely the previous climate action plan. One of the most notable parts of that was using the GHG emissions inventory that you guys had already produced, using 2005 as the baseline, and then looking at the 21 measures across multiple different sectors of climate change. And one of the key points we brought away from this was that not every strategy was monitored up until 2024. And we saw that as a big area that we could capitalize on to try to bring some new ways to have some more adaptive strategies. And looking at the general plan, Plan Morro Bay, there was specifically conservation element and goal C-4, which basically says that the city would want to keep a climate action plan updated. And then we also looked at the general plan to make sure everything we're doing is in compliance with the general plan. With the GHG emissions inventory, the graph on the left will show that 2005 baseline as well as the 2020 emissions. The two largest sectors were going to be transportation and then residential gas emissions. And even with the decrease in 2020, those were still the two larger sectors of GHG emissions. There was a roughly 60,000 metric tons of CO2 that decreased to about 50,000 metric tons of CO2. While that doesn't seem like a significantly large decrease, for a smaller community like Morro Bay, that's an incredible first step. And then the graph on the right shows all of this in context to state goals and city goals. And currently, Morro Bay is actually going beyond what the state is recommending for it. And with our project, we're proposing to have an even more aggressive and more ambitious goal to make sure that Morro Bay is staying ahead of all these. Ideally, we would like to see the city being carbon neutral and 85% below that 2005 baseline by 2040, which is more ambitious than both the state and the city's current general plan. By looking at everything in these background reports, previous city studies, and our own research, we identified the five most important factors for climate change, or I guess the most significant climate threats are going to be sea level rise, flooding, wildfire, extreme heat events, and landslides. Taking everything we had learned in sort of the initial stages of our research, we then wanted to go out into the community and get some ideas of what people who actually live here are thinking about this. So we started with a roundtable kickoff in October in this exact room, where we spoke to members of the community and worked with the community development department sort of as just a general introduction to this project, but also to actually talk to people and see what they're thinking about climate change, what they really like about Morro Bay, and what sort of issues they might see in the future. We also had a booth at the farmers market and spoke to students at the high school. We wanted to try to speak to as many people as we could and then really emphasize the future generation and what sort of issues they're thinking about, since in 20 or 30 years, some of these things are going to be something that they're going to have to address as well. And then the community development department was really helpful in putting a survey that we had onto the city's website. And the main goal with that was to try to reach anybody that was unable to go to any meetings and get as many members of the community involved as possible. And KCBX interviewed us as well and distributed it here to Morro Bay just to really get the word out. And all of this was really important to developing all these strategies, and these wouldn't have been possible without speaking to the community. Getting ideas from them is really helpful in combining that with all the research we did. And to talk more about some of those strategies, I'll pass it off to my colleague, Sam Matarazzo.
Good evening. So For the remainder of the presentation, we're going to be going over the strategies that we came up with in our report. There are over 60 strategies for you to review. However, we'll be presenting on about 10 of them, which we feel are the most innovative, which reflect the best of our work. And they are highlighted in the yellow areas. However, we had 14 total areas, which are covered more in depth in the report. And in that report, each measure is evaluated for its cost, its greenhouse gas reductions, and these five co-benefit areas of community health, air quality, resiliency, economic benefit, and cost savings. First strategy is floodplain guidance, and this works, this involves sea level rise and flooding at the same time. So the goal here is to make Morro Bay resilient in the long term against the most extreme possible flooding event, like the two that we've seen in the last few years. This starts by updating what we rely on from FEMA. So currently FEMA's 100-year floodplain guidance is what is used in the general plan's public safety element, as well as the climate action plan. However, this has been shown to be both outdated and inaccurate as it relies upon data from about 1870 to 1970. So you miss about 50 years of some of the most extreme rainfall and flooding events that have happened, including the last 2 years. We recommend updating that to include the 500-year flood, which you can see is in the dark blue on this right-hand side picture. So by doing this in all municipal codes, which are all outlined in the report, which ones specifically should be updated, it will allow property owners and the city's properties who are affected by this to have the time to update their structures, update new development to ensure that they're resilient against these higher hazard events. Furthermore, this will allow for long-term cost savings. And in 2027, when FEMA updates their floodplain guidance, which most cities nationwide will then update theirs, the Morro Bay will already be ahead, as the 500-year flood that we're experiencing today, about 25, 50 years down the road, will have the occurrence of a 100-year flood. And for those who aren't familiar, 100-year flood is, if you took 100 years of history, it's the one highest level of occurrence over those 100 years. However, a 100-year flood could occur in twice in the next week, theoretically. In terms of sea level rise, we want to include king tide and surge data in all sea level rise modeling. So NOAA currently has a sea level rise viewer that anyone in the public could view, and it shows you how far sea level rise will come over about 100 years and up to a 6-foot sea level rise. However, these don't include king tide and storm surge data, and by doing this, it'll allow plans like master planning in the Embarcadero, anything around Morro parking lot, to see what something could be captured in a storm as opposed to just pure sea level rise. That being said, Morro Bay is afforded the luxury that a lot of cities nationwide are not, in that sea level rise will probably not impact the city for at least another 20 to 30 years in a meaningful way where property becomes damaged. So with that, the city has time to work on improving the coastal squeeze and its dune management, something that the previous presentation also referenced. So coastal squeeze occurs when sea level rise shrinks beach area while the urban development boundary prevents dunes from having their natural migration inward. In order to work on this and improve it, we've studied nationwide and international projects, including work with Dutch engineers, the city of Charleston, South Carolina, who's also worked with them and has seen success, as well as Santa Monica, California, who has implemented a beach nourishment program in conjunction with the Coastal Commission to show that a similar environment can have successful dune nourishment strategies. And this is based on the principle that as sea levels rise, dunes actually outpace their rise. So it's about a 1-to-4 ratio. So for every foot of sea level rise, you get about 4 feet of dune rise. So by working with the natural properties of dunes, Morro Bay can mitigate those effects, especially on those properties. I can't remember the name of the parking lot that abuts right up against that dune barrier. And then the last part is managed retreat, which involves things like transfers of development rights, intensive engagement with property owners who will be affected by that. And given the amount of time that Morro Bay has before they can expect to see these impacts, there's ample time for the government, for any local stakeholder to be engaged as to the effects that their properties may see. with that, thinking long term and thinking about Morrowbay's place in the planning world, we envision a bit of a climate innovation hub developing around the timeframe that Morrowbay has to prepare, as well as the strategies and we've discussed and the local brain trust of our two schools, Cuesta College and Cal Poly. So this would start by beginning to host symposiums, events surrounding climate adaptation, surrounding natural-based solutions, sea level rise, dew nourishment, and the sort. This will help to diversify the local hospitality economy, as well as bring more investment into that Embarcadero downtown area where we would expect to host these events. Furthermore, a research application program is something the city can stand to benefit from, where students such as ourselves and others will be able to have their senior projects, their studios, work with Morrowbay in a Coastal Commission approved manner, that where they can study things such as the previous slide, strategies, other innovative strategies, working with local indigenous partners, with local interest groups to find ways that Morrowbay can innovate, as well as our favorite topic of the night, the Morrow parking lot. So this part works to bridge that gap that we talked about earlier between the dream of a smaller parking lot, one that has a lower ecological footprint, but where, how do we get there? So a parking benefit district essentially is an area of parking where there are fees, whether that's a toll booth you come in, that's metered fees. And the effect of it on Morrow Rock would be long-term to reduce demand, allowing the city to shrink the amount of parking in the area. So all the revenues generated from a parking benefit district would largely go into the parking lot. So whether that's improving facilities such as restrooms, improving multimodal transit to get in to offset that decrease in demand from vehicle parking, all those funds are things that can be done through community engagement, hearing how the community would want to spend that money, as it is their money. And with another aspect is, as temperatures increase, Morrowbay can expect to see an increase in tourism. While that may sound counterintuitive because it's going to be hotter and less comfortable to be outside here, if it's 90 here, 95 here, it may be 115 in Bakersfield in Paso. So people will still want to come to that cool sea breeze that we have. So with that said, we'll be able to decrease demand. We'll be able to remove those parking spaces specifically and hopefully in areas where sea level rise will begin to impact the parking lot, where dune migration will begin to impact the parking lot. And as a result, it will save a great deal of money in maintenance in those areas as you start seeing all sorts of problems from waves, from water intrusion, and the like. So those are about all of our adaptation strategy that we'll be sharing. And for the remainder of the presentation, pass it off to Sullivan Israel.
Sam, so I'm going to share a few more strategies with you guys. A number of them have to do with transportation. You may remember from back in the beginning of the presentation, transportation is the largest emission sector, and so it's super important to try and tackle that head on. So the first strategy I'd like to share with you today is an e-bike share program. For this, we looked at a number of case studies in other cities. So bike share programs are nothing new. It's basically the idea of having bikes that the city or private company owns that people can rent for a certain amount of time, whether by the hour or by the day. So what we're suggesting for Morrowbay is a dock-based system so that people don't leave their bikes wherever they want, but that they're specific docks. And of course, the city can do a study to try and figure out where the best locations for those will be, probably in front of hotels, along the Embarcadero, at Morrow Rock. One of the reasons to have a bike share program is, Sam mentioned, many people come to Morrowbay as tourists. That's no secret. So it's hard to get those people to change the mode in which they get here, which is probably by car. But once they're here, we can try and change how they actually get around the city. So if they want to go from their hotel to Morrow Rock, they are making the choice to drive, but having a bike dock right in front of their hotel and another at the Rock may actually change their decision of how they're going to get there. So it can serve both tourists and locals. Another reason to have a bike share program is it lowers the cost of using a bike. So e-bikes are still kind of expensive. People might not want to transport them even if they do own one. And so if you're renting one by the hour and it's $30, it's much more likely that people will use them. It also encourages new riders to try out bikes because it's a you know, they don't have to go out and buy one and then find out they don't like it. They could just try it once or twice. And also, I have a graph here from Santa Barbara, which just shows a huge number of miles that have been ridden on their bike share program. So it's been very successful in other coastal cities as well, not just large towns. So here we have next strategy is the electric vehicle readiness plan. So the idea here is actually creating a document that is a readiness plan for the huge influx of electric vehicles that will be seen over the next few years. So a state goal, we mentioned also in the earlier part of the presentation that part of what this updated climate action plan is trying to get more in line with new state goals. So for instance, a new state goal is this mandate that by 2035, 100% of new vehicle sales in the state will be electric. Right now, Morro Bay only has 20 public chargers across 7 stations. So that is definitely not adequate for the number of new electric vehicles that are going to be coming in. So the idea with the plan is to try and figure out where the strategic locations to put all these new chargers, again, based on demand and also cost. These can both be public locations, you know, along sidewalks and in parking lots, but also partnering with business owners, especially owners of large businesses like hotels, figuring out how to get them to put in more chargers, what incentives there could be for them. We did a little bit of math, and we estimate based on the state numbers that Morro Bay will need 3,000 chargers by 2035. So a big increase. Like I said, there can be public-private partnerships where perhaps there's a lot identified and it's a private company that runs the chargers that actually comes in and burden has the cost burden of actually putting them in. Next strategy, complete streets. So complete streets are already required by the state. They're required to be considered. So what we're suggesting is that they become a stronger policy in Morro Bay. So for those who don't know, the idea behind a complete street and why it's called complete is that it should be complete for all road users. So that's both people driving, people biking, and people walking. So completeness looks like safe infrastructure for those different modes, whether those are separated bike lanes or sidewalks that don't have cracks in them or roads that are easy to navigate. And so they should be comfortable basically for all those different users, and as well as aesthetically pleasing. And the good news is that Morro Bay has streets that are wide enough that changes can be made, especially adding bike lanes. Oh, and also with complete streets, I should mention that there are a number of funding opportunities that have come into existence since the last climate action plan. From the state, there's ATP, Active Transportation Grants, there's Safe Streets for All, and we identify a number of those in the plan itself. So another strategy, which is not related to transportation, is the ocean-friendly restaurants program. So this is actually a national nonprofit that restaurants can enroll in, and they get to be a part of it if they fulfill a number of requirements, mainly focused around not having single-use plastic items at their restaurants, as well as styrofoam. So Morro Bay has actually already advanced along that a little bit with styrofoam, but there's still plenty of room as a city to start requiring some of those more rules around plastic. And when restaurants join this program, the incentive is that they get certain benefits from being in it, and they get listed as well. So with that, I want to end the presentation by talking about the future. What is this plan accommodating in? What's the idea here? So it was mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, but part of the idea is that by 2040, Morro Bay can be carbon neutral. And that is 5 years ahead of the state mandate, which would be pretty cool to brag about. Another idea is resilience. So Morro Bay also needs to be resilient, not just responsive to climate change, but that when these things do happen, whether it's sea level rise affecting the parking lot or extreme heat or flooding, that some of these measures will actually help Morro Bay be resilient and have less of less problems in the future when those things happen. And the last point here is community. So hopefully as this process goes forward and as these things are implemented, community members are able to participate, engage, and actually have public dialogue as part of all these new changes. And there can also be educational and financial resources for community members to learn, address, and prepare for the future of climate impacts. So with that, I want to say thank you and also open up the floor to questions, not just to those of us who presented, but as you saw earlier, there are 14 areas and everyone who wrote about all those different areas are actually here. So you can ask about anything you saw. And I'm sure everyone is very excited, I'm sure, to help answer those things. So thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Wow. Michael.
Yeah, just a few concluding comments before we open to questions. First, I just want to thank the staff, the Planning Commission, the community members that participate in our engagement efforts. At Cal Poly, of course, I'm sure as you know, you hear all the time, we're learn by doing. So, you know, we were here to help more obey and do what we could, but you were helping us as well fulfill our learn by doing mission at Cal Poly. What's going to happen next? So what we've provided to you is our background report and a set of draft strategies. We are currently still working on these and developing more detail on how implementation might work, particularly looking at potential funding sources and things of that nature. We'll be packaging all this together in a draft climate action plan with an introduction, an implementation section, and other key components. We've got about 2.5 weeks left in the quarter, so we'll be wrapping all this up and providing that to the city for their future use, as Michael had explained. And then one last thing to mention is that that sort of ends our formal obligation through our community planning studio, but 8 of these students will be continuing on next quarter to work on individual projects to continue some of the work that they've done here. So there will be an opportunity to do further work on some of the specific actions. So that's another thing we're interested in tonight. We've asked staff this question, but you know, we're here to serve. How can we help you best? So we'd love to hear some feedback on that as well. Thank you.
So Michael, that would be the next semester is focusing on implementation strategies. How would you define that?
It would, it's essentially to do two things, to go more in depth on some of these issue items. As you'll see, and you can see in the packet, we've presented sort of introductory material to some of these ideas, but we can go a lot more in depth in them, pull more case studies, look more, and then secondly, also to add more implementation detail as well.
Got it.
Yeah. So, for example, in one of our recommendations is to fully develop an EV readiness plan. And next quarter, we believe we will have a student who will be working on developing that full EV readiness plan.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Can you stand there 1 second?
Sure.
Commissioners, yes. We can ask questions now or take public comment. And then we would comment at the end. You want to do public first? Does that go with everybody? Great. So with that, I'd like to open public comment. Michael, Cindy, anything to say before we go there? Let me start this just by saying thank you guys so much. A really impressive presentation.
I wasn't going to wait for you to call on me this time. I could feel it coming. So,
well, you know, you did spend 10 hours reading. Very,
yes, I did. Actually, I spent another several hours after I wrote that paper for you. Where to start? Unbelievable presentation tonight. I have sat through numerous professional presentations where government entities have spent large dollars, and the final work product of those professional presentations would not hold a candle to what we just saw here tonight. So I don't know what we can do as a community to continue to reinforce our relationship with Cal Poly and Cal Poly's Community Development Department, but I think that we should do everything we can to continue to try to keep those links going, particularly since our budget being what it is, we don't have the staff to do it, but it seems like they're there, so let's take advantage of them. Specific to the proposal, there were numerous items highlighted in various places in the proposal. I thought in the package that I got, the early part of the proposal was extremely well written and made a lot of sense and brought me a lot of confidence in what was being done. Where the second portion of the program, where there was an attempt to integrate climate action with the existing local coastal plan that we have, that we spent, I'm not sure how much, probably in excess of $1 million, and I know in excess of 10 years to develop. It unfortunately pointed out a lot of voids and incompleteness in the follow-through of the directives of that evolving local coastal plan. So I would hope that if this body is going to continue to evaluate a climate action plan, that we do it in context with our existing LCP and also our implementation strategies, because I think that we need to merge these documents. We can't continue to have a 200-page document here, a 200-page document here. I think Eric came in a couple of meetings back with binders showing the community documents necessary to just attempt to get a building permit. This is another 200-page document, and it's not even done yet. So that's what I would hope. I'm unlike one of the respondents from the public, I don't think this is a waste of time. I think it's very important to do, but I'm only willing to be involved in it if I see that it's going to lead to real direction and real positive takeaways that we can do stuff with. And I think your body can do that, but it's a lot of work, and it's going to require this integration with our existing plans. It can't be another standalone plan. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Others that would like to speak? Bill, welcome.
Oh, yeah, just a
thanks
quick
for
comment.
Staying. Yeah.
Yeah, it had to do with sea level rise. I know a few years back, if we had a tsunami that rolled through from Japan, it caught us at a low tide. Had that been a high tide, it would have wiped out the Embarcadero, just to give you a case in point. But we lucked out. It was a low tide. And even at that, it did a lot of damage. And I bring that up because of, I know one of the big talking points in Morro Bay is building a world's largest battery plant in a tsunami zone. And so I think that's something that we need to, in your climate action plan, as far as locating projects outside of future sea level rise or tsunami areas, that we need to really concentrate on areas where that isn't a problem, because I know, like, getting back to battery plants, they can be located any place under a high power line, put them a mile inland. So just a case in point on the tsunami, where we just kind of almost, the bullet almost got it, but we missed it. So it can be out there and waiting for us. Without rambling, I think electric cars, like you say, our number one pollutant are the tourists coming over. So we're kind of our own worst enemies, building more and more hotels and motels, because that brings more of the pollution our way. And to mitigate that, I agree with your chargers and transferring, and electric cars, electric vehicles are probably one of the more important things to get us towards a climate that will be kind of less warming, you might say. I'm kind of struggling for words. I know back in the 60s, we had a different problem, and that was called a nuclear winter. If you want to solve, the warming climate, back then you drop a nuclear bomb and the world turns cold for a year or two and we all freeze. So Putin does have an answer, but anyway, I'm done rambling. Bye.
That's a little dark, yeah. Kelsey, welcome.
I just wanted to thank you guys. That was a wonderful presentation. And, a lot of points that you brought up were really, really important to face. One thing I just wanted to kind of mention in there is, talking about the parking structure and the way that it can be organized, something that when we did our projects, they had reworked the parking structure, talking about what we can do now and plan for the future. With the spacing that currently exists there, you can actually reduce the spacing while still being compliant and have the same exact number of parking within a much smaller footprint. And I think that that's an important thing to realize as to that doesn't take a lot of infrastructure change or planning and development, but that is something that can be done. And I think that, you guys kind of commenting on that and restructuring it, opening those kind of ideas is important to look at. And I agree with a lot of what you guys had said too, with merging plans together. I think it's so important. There's so many times within a government we have
this hand over here doing something that's kind of similar to this hand over here, but no one is talking to each other, or the overlap of it gets lost through all of, you know, the paperwork and the processes. So being able to really commingle everything together and simplify things in a cohesive way would be really important for moving forward. And agree also with collaboration. The different departments I've worked with in Cal Poly, they're always so wonderful. And Cuesta also. I absolutely love Cuesta. And so if you guys can partner, I'm just a citizen here. You know, if you guys partner with Cal Poly, they have such a good driving force and so innovative with ideas. And also being able to, with emissions free and talking about battery storage plant and having electric vehicles, but finding that balance too, to make sure that the path we're going forward in green energy is not just green energy, it is responsible green energy. This is a topic that Morro Bay has to talk about right now because of offshore wind, battery storage, carbon-free future, what all of these things look like and how do they commingle, and to include the conversations about Diablo plant and that's future, whether it's decommissioned in the future or not. But talking about an energy plan in this is so important in all of the aspects.
Thank you so much. Yes. Others, do we have anybody else who would like to speak? Betty, welcome.
Thank you. Betty Winholtz. Just in broad terms, I will affirm what others have said, that the commingling of the documents is really important, that this needs to fulfill the general plan through our implementation plan. But more importantly, to pick up on Bill's point about, or maybe it wasn't, it's just me projecting. I feel like what's lacking, because I haven't done the big reading that you all have done, is acknowledging the nature of Morro Bay in terms of who's here and who comes here. Like acknowledging that tourism is a huge part of us, and at the same time acknowledging that we're kind of an older community. So how do these plans fit into those dynamics of who we are? And I this is a suggestion, not a criticism, but as you go into your depth in next quarter, is there some way you can bring these two qualities into your research?
Betty, thank you. And I think when we get to the end, there's a response to that. There's some things included in the report. Others, city council members, this was such a stunning presentation. I'm sort of wondering if you might consider it for city council. Yeah. Well, you're invited to say anything if you'd like to, but I don't want to put you on the spot. Okay. Anybody else like to speak? Hank, do we have anybody on the queue?
Chair Roshan, we have no raised hands in the queue.
If that's the case, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Before we start, Michael, Cindy, do you have some responses? There's a couple of questions that I think you might be able to respond to. Certainly, Terry's concerned about how we, launder the documents to an effective level. The other thing would be, I do think the report did deal with like issues of employment here. Also, the fact that one of our biggest actually pollutants is the fact that we have so many commuters coming here to work. But would you guys like to address those issues before?
All right. Thank you, Chair Rush and members of the commission. Fantastic presentation. And, I think in terms of it's a great ideal in terms of combining or figuring out some way to create a pathway or a key to understand all the documents that are in effect as you're trying to plan, whether it's public space, whether it's a private property development. You know, it's always a challenge. And we're in the coastal zone as well. And so that creates a whole extra layer of review and understanding. And so I think it's a worthwhile project for sure to figure out a way to communicate the city's policies, programs, requirements,
in a way that's accessible to people. You know, in community development, our biggest customers are just homeowners who, you know, maybe their only experience with city government is when they want to make an improvement to their home and, you know, add a bathroom or add a bedroom or whatever it might be. And, you know, for your residents, you want that process to be understandable, digestible, so that they can plan that out, budget correctly, know how long it's going to take. And so an effort, you know, to consolidate and be able to present everything that's involved with those types of projects would go a long way and be really worthwhile. So so I think that's a great suggestion. And just turn over to Cindy, if you have any comments.
Or anything to add?
I would say that, you know, that is the art of explaining what we do. Everything stems from the general plan, and we are required to make sure that our documents are consistent with one another. The conservation element is the portion of the general plan, the Plan Morro Bay, that requires us, or that says we will update the climate action plan. And that's really, you know, one of the underlying goals that we had with updating our city documents is how can we make them more resident friendly, business friendly, you know, community friendly. And the draft climate action plan before us, you know, it represents a wonderful first step in bringing us forward to that, you know, ability to update our documents. And now the challenge is to make sure that they're consistent.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. So commissioners, I'd like to outline a way we can start to talk about this. And we also have the ability to ask questions. One of the things I'd like to point out is the strategies. There's a couple of incredible strategies that were spoken about. The Planet Innovation Hub, I think that's an outrageously exciting idea here for Morro Bay in partnership with the communities. The other thing that the group was able to raise was the idea of parking benefit districts, which is intrinsic to a lot of the things we've been looking at, including the Embarcadero, but also downtown. So these are real implementation things that do merge with some of the projects that the commission's been involved with and also the department's been involved in. I think the other thing is the general plan audit. I found that really helpful and compelling, and ways that we might actually consider working with the group next semester or next trimester in the spring and kind of bring specific ideas to them in terms of how those things might fit with us. One example is housing, where the identification of you know, the greenhouse gases was highest because of all the commuting to this area. And the only way to sort of stop that on a daily basis would be to have attainable housing in town. And they make that very clear, and that's certainly one of the key goals from the city council. So with those kind of three points, I'm trying to sort of blend some of their issues that it fits the Planning Commission's opportunities most, but there's much more to talk about. It really, a stunning report, honestly. I'm really excited. Can I start with you, Joe?
Yeah, I think to call this this work comprehensive is a gross understatement. You know, when I was reading it for the third time and trying to absorb even a small fraction of it, you know, I was reminded of the phrase of the Hawaiians, and if you don't love this report, you simply don't love Jesus. I realize that there are some aspects of it that will get more definite in the next phase, but it's just an incredible effort. It's absolutely essential that we keep the students involved. They're such a resource, and particularly in the Morro Bay's environment where, you know, resources are limited, both in staff and financial. It's just absolutely essential. Plus, it's just a wonderful opportunity. We'd be fools if we didn't make better use of it. But the variety of documents that have to do with planning and the action plan, it strikes me that they really have to be distilled and aggregated so you can understand them with some kind of long-term understanding. It's one thing to read a document, fine, I understand it. Well, I understand it, you know, a month later, 6 months later, or a year. It's almost as if we should produce some kind of a condensation, an outline. So what I'm giving is so we can keep, we have to try and keep the document always relevant. I mean, we should, probably at every one of our meetings, we should be asking ourselves, all right, what we are deciding today, how does that address, you know, what's in this plan?
Well, and almost with every application, right?
I mean, yes, that's yes.
Really, really
yeah,
key.
Yeah. And for us, that will be the real work, because, you know, I would guess that so often these kinds of documents just get put on a shelf and are, if not forgotten, largely ignored until the next requirement for still another document or a revision comes up, and there's a great deal of enthusiasm for it, and then that document gets put on a shelf. So we have to keep this document not on the shelf, but in front of us. And beyond that, I mean, I'm at a loss as to how we achieve that specifically. I just know that's what we have to achieve.
Well, so far, Joe, your comment is the quote of the year. So we have to remember that one. And before you go, Asia, like, there's so much here to talk about, like the e-bike share is another incredible strategy which works with tourism and parking. The EV readiness plan, to think that we might be able to go there would be spectacular. And then complete streets. All of this stuff is doable and not expensive, really. So I do think there's outcomes, Asia.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing, or what would I feel like would be really valuable, is what you guys are talking about, taking some of the most impactful recommendations from the plan and seeing how they, like, cross-referencing them with the city goals for the year that the city council's been over, and then with our goals for the year, and how maybe we can get periodic check-ins as during our meetings to see how they're aligning with the implementation goals of this plan. I think that would be really helpful, really useful. One of the thoughts I had reading through, and maybe I just missed it, but I think what would be really useful is seeing some of those most impactful recommendations that are also, like, very feasible and really affordable, seeing the, or having a table or a part of the plan that is like a landscape analysis of current funding opportunities. So I know some plans, like hazard mitigation plans, often require that funding resources be listed in alongside implementation ideas. And I think that would be really helpful to the city, especially considering, you know, the current federal administration's funding packages. What is available beyond the, or within the state and beyond the state, to actually fund some of these recommendations? Because there's a lot out there, a lot going on right now that, you know, where the city doesn't have funds, we could kind of happen to that. So that would be,
so, Asia, could I address that to the students? Does Michael, students, does anybody, can anybody respond? Is that a possible follow through?
Good evening, commissioners, members of the public. Thank you so much for all your comments. It's sure. been extremely helpful just hearing from you guys and hearing what you guys have to think about it. Specifically to that comment with funding, that is, and as well as implementation, the drafts you have in front of you are essentially just outlines of the measures that we have so far. And the next draft that we'll be delivering to you will have details with funding, GHG, like actual mitigation, like quantifying that, as well as a pretty robust implementation discussion.
So your strategies, for example, will like cross-reference two funding sources?
Some of them will identify specific funding sources, like, for example, the bike share, the complete streets. Those have like more available funding sources to them.
Got it.
But others will be a little more sort of up in the air.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, and I just really want to encourage, like, I know not every implementation plan will have a direct funding source, but there's like there's a lot going on out there federally right now with dollars. And so I really encourage you to look at creative ways so that the city can really actively pursue things. Yeah, thanks.
Asia, thank you. Eric, somehow I get the feeling you might be more critical.
I have a story first. So in a different life, I used to live in San Luis, and Buzz and I were on the Planning Commission together, your professor, and we were putting together the climate action plan for the city of San Luis Obispo. I'm going to guess it's around 2010, Mike. I forget, somewhere in 11. And no one really ever thinks it's a climate action plan is pushing all the other elements in a city, but in a way you can. And what we did that night was in a room full of essentially people who are interested in the environment and interested in climate action and so forth. And this is, mind you, 14 years ago, plus or minus. We looked at the mode shares in the community and what we looked at, what they currently were. And within the climate action plan, we decided to determine where we wanted the mode shares to be rather than just saying, yeah, you know, here's what it is. We said, here's what the city thinks it should be. And with the approval and agreement amongst everybody in the audience, including the five commissioners, we pushed our bike mode share in St. Louis from, I think at that time it was about 5%, and we went for 20. And I said 20 just because I thought I would get fought on it, but I didn't, nobody fought. And then Mike and I kind of looked at each other and like, holy moly, well, that was fun. And then there it is in the document, right? There it is. So that climate action plan then suddenly had that 20% mode share as a goal for the city of San Luis Obispo. And that was the only document amongst all the elements in the city that had that number. And so over the course of the following years, all the other documents need to be brought up to speed. And so they looked to the most recent updated document, which in this case was a climate action. So it's in the climate action plan. So nobody argued. Well, there it was. So the city. And so over time, that kind of affected the way and the shape of the city of San Luis Obispo's complete streets program, et cetera. And that was all just because of one little whim in one document. So don't let those things go. You have a lot of opportunities for those kinds of decisions, but you do need to benchmark. You need to get the benchmarking down for what the modes are now, where they have been, and where you anticipate them going. And like, for instance, within your discussions on transit, now San Luis Obispo, and we also upped our transit there. But in Morro Bay, transit is a little bit different because we don't have the occupancy within the vehicle. We have a lot less ridership. We have a lot, the bus is emptier, let's just say. And so when you actually look at your plan, I think that within specifically the transit one, I actually think that the way you would decrease greenhouse gas in this town would be to kill the bus, because the bus is actually using more fuel than cars would to drive the people around that need be, but that's from specifically a GHG discussion. When you look at it socially, there's a number of people in the community that socially we need to support. And so the social aspects of the bus outweigh, in my opinion, the GHG negative aspects. But I do think we need to discuss, I looked at your background report. And when I do the math on the background report with respect to transit ridership and the number of miles, you know, it comes down to like three people per hour. And I think the 200 gallons of gas would be used in cars for the year to take those people where they need to go versus driving the bus however many hours a day. That kind of math, I think, needs to be in there just to be honest with ourselves about what's going on with the numbers. And then you can realize, okay, at what point do we reach a threshold of balance? At some point, the bus with a certain frequency and a certain occupancy is going to make sense and start to make, I'm going off into too much detail. I think you get the gist of that discussion. I really appreciate your thoughts about the 500-year flood versus the 100-year flood, because that's absolutely appropriate. I appreciate the king tide stuff. I also have been pushing king tide information. I like the climate innovation hub idea. I think that ties into some other ideas that could happen with respect to the whatever happens in around the rock and around the power plant and around what is Morro Bay want to be when it grows up. The idea of housing and the GHG associated with homes, Morro Bay has a greater and greater number of vacant homes. We have a lot of residents that don't, that their second or third or fourth homes, and there's more and more of them. Any more study you can do around what the vacant homes are, not that that's a great, I think it'll show, you're doing that to some degree now,
Also around housing, you talked a lot about adding solar panels and incentivizing solar panels, but I think you should really research into the duck curve around the solar. We have a lot of solar panels in California. We actually are overproducing solar certain times a day and certain days in California. And so I would expect maybe looking at home batteries so that rather than just having all that power going out to the grid, saving some of that power so you can reuse it. That's something else I think should be discussed in there. The paid parking stuff, the adaptation strategies I like, the electric bike share program. In communities, there's a lot of conflicting groups. So in Morro Bay or in any city, there's bids, business improvement districts. And the big bid here is, around the restaurants and hotels. And their modus operandi is, let's get butts in seats and move them to Morro Bay as much as we can, which is kind of counter to what you guys are talking about. So I might suggest even just having a chat with the bid, have a meeting with the bid just to kind of understand where they're coming from. And maybe there's some way, I don't know what it is, I wish it did, of having some sort of commonality, find the commonality between reducing greenhouse gases and promoting tourism. If you can beat that, you can beat that one, we'll win the planet. I'll stop there. I think I had other stuff to say, but it's pretty much surmised. I know it's a draft. It's a lot of spelling errors. There's a lot of typos. There's a lot of misplaced words or missing words. There's some asterisks that don't have asterisks. They lead to something that's not there. That kind of stuff is throughout the document. So I'll just leave my English tutoring to somebody else. But thank you. It's fun to see. It's really encouraging to see it at such a breadth. Thanks.
If I could offer a summation, again, stunning report. I really hope the city council can find a way to hear this. I think the way it merges with our planning ambitions are really substantive, especially around the general plan. I'm going to suggest a couple of things. One that I think is incredibly interesting is how this double policy night with Cal Poly is kind of the brand of Morro Bay, that we have to be good stewards of nature. And this is also involving our resiliency, our energy use. And we are the center of much discussion around energy use. Something like ocean-friendly restaurants. I mean, that seems like such an obvious thing for us. I think there's other things. What I'd like to suggest, commissioners, there's so much in this report, is that we would do our homework and kind of come up with written lists coming out of tonight, so we can't go through everything, to help the students. I think they deserve it. I think it's such a thoughtful effort that I think we can help them even more. Second thing is, and you're used to me suggesting this, I would love to put together a two-person subcommittee to work with the students in the spring if they would have us. And I think we would love to be able to take some of these things that are most important to us and the city council. I think we could help inform you on where they fit. I'd like to volunteer to be a part of that group if you would have us. And I'm opening up to the commissioners who would like to join me.
I probably all would.
I think so. So, I hate to take precedence, but I'm going to be on it. So I'm really enthusiastic about this. And I want to also thank Eric that it is, what did you say? It can push other issues. And I think as we begin to define, what these other opportunities are, this can be a major tool for the Planning Commission and the Planning Department, I think, to not only get better projects, but a better long-range planning. So I'm way into it. Who would like to volunteer?
Yeah, I would volunteer, without doubt, yes.
Okay, so that's an offer. If you would like to do it, please reach out to us. And I think at the very least, we're going to give you written documents of what we heard tonight and what we gained from reading it. That's my sort of final thought. Commissioners, you can have any final words that you'd like.
Thanks. It's fun to watch. I think your classes are a fun class to be part of. I mean, class is the wrong word, but your CRP, et cetera, is fun to be part of.
Yeah. And thank you guys, really. With that, we're close to finishing our agenda. So let me move on to the next item. You want to answer that?
Well, this is something that I'll need to educate myself on over time in terms of how the City Council sets priorities through the budget process. But normally, a project such as this would be something that would be presented to the City Council in a and then would be prioritized or not, you know, through a budget process. You know, the city had, there's so much for the city to do, right? And so it's kind of one of those, the saying that I've used a lot in my career, heard a lot in my career is we can do anything, but we can't do everything. And that's what the budget process does, is it really allows the City Council to look at all the possible ways for the city to spend its limited resources and then prioritize. And so if this comes out of a future budget process as a priority and gets funding, then it would be something that we can take forward and present to the Planning Commission and the City Council in a more final form for, hopefully for adoption.
Michael, thank you. So I want to go on to other things, but I did want to do one final comment. Except for Cindy leaving us, this is really a happy day for Morro Bay. This was really good stuff, part one and part two. Unfinished business, do I hear any? Planning Commissioner comments, future agenda items? Hearing none. Community Development Director, interim, any comments?
Nothing more from me. Thank you.
With that, do I have a motion to adjourn?
I will move to adjourn.
A second.
Okay, second.
Thank you guys very much.